You could almost call Lent a time of going back to the basics, and that's what we're doing. So today we're going to talk about the third eye. You know how you see in some Hindu people sometimes, you know, this spot here. I used to teach comparative religions and theology classes at Duquesne and also in Montana at Carroll College in my earlier career. And I used to have Hindu students in class, young girls, and they'd have this mark here, and I'd say, well, what does that mark mean? And they'd look at me and they'd say, well, it's a beauty mark. I said, indeed, it is a beauty mark. But in traditional Hindu theology, it is the symbol of the third eye, the mystical eye. So we've got the two physical eyes, and then we have that mystical spiritual eye by which we penetrate to the meaning of things in the spiritual, deeper sense of the word. Isn't that a beautiful idea? And so, in a way, we're going to talk about that mystical spiritual eye. We're going to talk about faith. You know, faith is, you would say, a very basic notion in Christianity, wouldn't you say? And certainly it is. But what is faith? How often do we sit back and ask ourselves, what do we mean when we use that word faith? What does it signify for us? And here we have a definition of the word faith given to us right away in the first reading from the book of Genesis about Abraham. Although we should probably include in this text also Sarah, his wife. Don't get me started on that. The male, female, why the female sometimes is missing in the text. There's lots of reasons historically for that. But so as we're talking about Abraham here, but think Sarah as well, and think also the family, his family. And they're being called from where they live now, somewhere in Ur of the Chaldees, the Babylonian region, Mesopotamian region, somewhere in there. They're being called from there into what the text calls the promised land. And we've got to remember that these texts about Abraham and Sarah are written over 1,000 years later than the event. So the event occurs maybe around 1800 BC, somewhere in there, scholars think. And the text is not written down till about maybe starting oral traditions have been handed on, and maybe by the year 1000 during the reign of King David, the texts begin to take a written form, and they don't take their final form till another 500 years later. So we're talking about a tradition, historical tradition, that's been handed on for some 1500 years. And eventually now it's kind of written down. So we have to think about Abraham's and Sarah's and the family's experience here. And we're being given a definition of what faith is, but it's not so much, we're not giving it in words. It's being shown to us. It's not being explained to us. It's being shown to us, which is much better than any other kind of verbal explanation, don't you think, to actually see it? Faith, it is a willingness to listen to a call, no matter how difficult and challenging the call may be. You could imagine all the family being called to leave their home, leave what they know and everything else, and move on into another territory, another land. You can just imagine some of you who have moved from one place to another. You know how difficult that is and how painful that can be, and sometimes how lonely you feel. And if you've ever gone to a foreign land and you're an American, and a typical American who speaks very poor foreign languages, and is a very poor at that, and you get into these foreign lands, you don't even know how to ask somebody where the bathroom is, or you know, it's you just feel so alienated. And just imagine what it was like, all of these kinds of things. Just let your imagination go. There wasn't even a language available, a theological language available to Abraham and Sarah to articulate what their experience is. They just feel some, they sense some sort of impulse to go, to move. So right away the text is saying, well, faith is something like a movement. a going out, a willingness to accept a challenge. It is an act of being faithful to some deep impulse and some deep call within you. And this call is so important and so overriding that it takes precedence over everything else in your life at this point. In other words, it is a call from something very, very important in one's life. Later we will say that's a call from God. The divine mystery of reality calling someone. So what if we were to try to put into words what this is, we might say, well, faith is something like an act of being faithful, an act of fidelity to this deep call within oneself. Fidelity to the deep call of the kind of ultimate foundational reality in one's life. We say sometimes, follow your heart. Follow what is that deep source within you that just keeps saying, you know, if you stay where you are right now, it's just not going to be right. We have to move on. If we keep acting this way, if we keep thinking this way, if we keep doing the same old things, it's not going to be right. It's not going to work. We have to move on and find a different way of being. We have to be faithful to that. We have to trust that. Fidelity to that. So, with that, we could say that's a definition of faith. Fidelity to the deepest impulses of our being calling us and moving towards that. So it's not so much faith as an act of believing this and believing that and believing this and believing that and so on like that. In theology, we talk about two types of faith. There's the basic faith, the fidelity to the deep call of God in one's life. And then there's a second kind of faith, which is, you know, you try, it's like Abraham and Sarah, when they had this deep call, God was calling them to a better land where they could flourish and be free and be liberated and so on. Okay, once you kind of establish that that's what you're going to do, then you use your mind and you try to figure out what are the best ways to get there. So faith as fidelity to the deep call, and then faith as then you use your mind to kind of figure out what are the best things to do to get there. Those are the two types. We call that the faith by which we are to live, and then the faith, once we establish that, then we try to figure out what are the best things to believe and the best things to do to get there. That's faith in a secondary sense. So that's the first thing. So if you're wondering in your own life what faith is, what that spiritual eye is, in the deepest sense, that might be something that could help us figure out what it is. What we're doing is say we're believers, we're being faithful people. So how faithful are we to that? Are you feeling that you're spiritually nourished here? That your family is spiritually nourished? Are you feeling that? Are you sensing that? Why do you get up and come to church every week? Something is calling you here. Is it just because your parents trained you that way? Well, it's not so bad. That's good. But something is, you know, and you wake up in the morning and say, well, I'm not going to go to church, and you miss church, and you actually miss it. Well, if you miss it, that means that there's something deep within you that's calling you to nourish something deep within you. Okay, that's fidelity to that. The second thing I want to mention is the text from John's Gospel, the story about Nicodemus. Nicodemus is the Pharisee. And, you know, he comes to visit Jesus at nighttime. It's like, it's kind of interesting, you know, John's Gospel is filled with all sorts of interesting little innuendos and signs and symbols and so on. And so it says he comes at night. So there's something in him, some impulse that helps him to say he recognizes something in Jesus. He's attracted to him. He's got it, see. He wants to be faithful to that impulse. Fidelity to that. Faith. But it comes at nighttime. Why does it come at nighttime? He doesn't want the other people around him to know he's attracted to Jesus. That would be a very commonsensical kind of way of thinking about it, obviously. So if we were to translate that sometimes into terms that we could maybe take home today, sometimes following the impulse of faith, sometimes it's not the popular thing to do. It's not the in thing. And if we follow that impulse, you know, look at those crazy, wild, weird people, you know, and so on like that, you know. So there's that whole kind of thing going on. But I'm so glad you are following that impulse. I sometimes think today in our culture, which is so kind of down on religion in some ways, that is institutional religion, I sometimes think that our job as grandparents, most of you look like you might be grandparents, handsome and beautiful, marvelously looking, healthy grandparents, but grandparents nonetheless. Young, yes. And so I think sometimes if it's the parents, they're out with their kids in sports activities and so on. See, our culture doesn't make it easy for religion. So who is going to raise the kids in faith? Us. We are the ones being called. The grandparents. You probably say to yourself, "Dear Lord, I don't need this grief. It's hard enough just to keep people happy on Sunday when they come over for dinner, let alone having this." And, well, you know, you have to figure out how best to do that. But that's, I think, part of our being faithful to the call today. I'm not going to clear my throat. So that's part of faith today. It's a challenge in our culture for us. But that may be a sign that our faith is authentic and real. Another thing about the night, though, is, you know, it's dark. And sometimes there is darkness in our faith experience. Mother Teresa, if you've ever read, you know, she left a kind of journal of her last 30 or 40 years of her life. And apparently she was in the dark a lot. One of the things that I remember is she was asked by somebody, "Mother Teresa, what do you do when you pray?" She says, "Well, I'm quiet." And then they said, "Well, what does Jesus say to you?" "He's quiet too." And a lot of times that's what our faith journey is like, right? God seems quiet. We're quiet. What is this? You know, it's dark. It seems like, you know, we may have doubts and so on like that. You know, all of these kinds of things going on. And I think what that tells us, one of the things it tells us is that, you know, God is a mystery. The reality of God is a mystery. And there are going to be these unknowable aspects of God that we don't quite comprehend. So being faithful to that. God's not just an echo of what we think. Not just an echo of our ideas. God's not that. You know, if you go to sit down and pray and all you hear is your own ideas all the time, that's probably a good sign that you're not really praying very well. You know what I mean? Or you go into a conversation and all you ever hear is your own ideas all the time, that good back to you. It's not a good idea. You don't learn anything. So part of faith is that willingness to get into the darkness where we recognize that we have a lot to learn. And sometimes it seems like we're in a fog, but the fog is the prelude to the dawn. That, I would say, is something maybe we might be able to learn. Those are a few of the things we might be able to learn from Nicodemus. And then the last thing I'm going to mention is in our particular culture, our culture is very left brain oriented, very reason dominated, scientifically dominated, and so on like that. Dominated by saying that we only accept what we can prove by way of experience. And when we use the word experience, we use the word experience in a very thin sense. The senses, the physical senses, what we see with the eyes, or touch with the hands, or smell with the nose, or hear with the ears. what we call a notion of experience limited to the senses, which is by and large the kind of experience that the technician in the sciences, not the great theoretical creative scientists, but the technicians of science use, the physical eyes. Faith, we have to ask ourselves the question here. So you'll hear people say, they'll say, well, take it on faith. And a lot of times what people mean by that is, well, if you can't prove it by reason, then take it on faith. It's like faith is like second best to reason. Reason is the preferable way. If we can prove it, that would be preferable. But if we can't, okay, then we'll take it on faith. But we always know, it's problematic thing. In other words, that kind of like displacement of faith to a kind of secondary or even tertiary or even worse level, so on. Exalting the physical eyes over the spiritual eye. And our faith tradition, and Jesus is saying to Nicodemus, you've got it all wrong. It's just the reverse. Our physical eyes will see well as long as this is in the driver's seat.